Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Armchair Expert early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Or you can listen for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Armchair Expert, Experts on Expert. I'm Dan Rather, and I'm joined by Leslie Stahl. And today our guest is Chris Nowinski. He is a neuroscientist, an author, and a retired professional wrestler. We've been just accumulating bizarre origin stories. But bizarre might not be the right word. Super fascinating origin stories.
Unusual.
Unusual, which is probably the definition of bizarre if you look it up. Probably says unusual.
Yeah. I've been thrilled to have Chris Nowinski on. I've been wanting to have someone on to talk about CTE for a long time.
You love CTE. It's your favorite topic. The dream scenario would be a CTE episode of The Pit.
Oh, my God. I'm that surprised they didn't explode. Do that.
They will. Season two.
I hope so. It got a season two. It's like rushing a season two.
Of course. John Wells is a legend. Okay. He has a book called Head Games, Football's Concussion Crisis. And if you want to get involved with the Concussion Legacy Foundation, concussionfoundation.org. This is a really, really interesting episode. And his story is second to none. Please enjoy Chris Nowinski. We are supported by Anytime Fitness. We're all about striving to be the best version of yourself, both mentally and physically. Moving your body is a great way to build strength in both areas. If I had to lose anything in my routine, the very last thing I would lose is my physical fitness routine.
And you know, I'm now lifting heavy weights.
You've even got some heavy dumbbells.
I've got some heavy because I have to get my bone density tip top because perimenopause, ladies.
That's right. The more fit, the stronger you can be, the better the rest of your life's going to be.
That's right.
To get stronger mentally and physically, go to Anytime Fitness. You'll get a personalized training, nutrition, and recovery plan all customized to your body, your strength level, and your goals. You'll get expert coaching to optimize your results anytime, anywhere, in the gym, and on the Anytime Fitness app. And you'll get anytime access to 5,500 gyms worldwide, all with the right equipment to level up your strength gains and your life. So get started at anytimefitness.com. That's anytimefitness.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews all on the app. Download Thumbtack today.
He's an armchair expert. He's an armchair expert. He's an armchair expert.
Do you know the author David Sedaris?
Yes.
Our greatest gift this whole show has given us. is we've interviewed him like six times, and he sends us postcards.
Oh.
And that postcards from Sedaris is
that
like...
He writes
them from all over the world.
Such a throwback to a better life.
Where are you coming in from?
I live in Florida now.
Oh, you do? What city in Florida?
Boynton Beach.
Where's Boynton Beach?
It's north of Boca, south of Palm Beach.
Okay.
Near my wife's family so that I can be living the dream on the road.
Do you have kids?
6 and 4, Kenzie and Charlie.
Okay, so yeah, you definitely need grandma and grandpa around.
They're doing a great job helping.
Yeah, we did it without a grandma and grandpa, but thank God my sister lives next door.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's oh my God, this is incredible.
No.
She said this is for P-Baby part two.
No.
For this space.
That's a deep, 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 deep.
That is a real listener, a real armchair.
Oh,
it's so
my
cute.
God. How does one get?
She probably invented it.
What do you call it when you commission?
Patent. Oh, yeah.
She commissioned this?
Yeah, yes. It took years to build.
Oh, and you have to pee in the tank. Because
yeah,
the lid
course.
Doesn't open.
Of course.
Oh, wow.
That's so perfect.
She's
going to
be so happy with
oh
that
my
reaction.
Oh, God. That is
right
incredible.
Here. Wow. And does it say explicitly for P Baby?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You wouldn't know the story behind P Baby.
I got to explain to you. I don't go back that deep.
Yeah, of course.
That's
I don't expect
very early days, P Baby.
We barely go back that deep. Sometimes we've completely
forgot. We forget.
Okay, so where did you move from to this area of Florida?
I was in Boston for 25 years.
But you're from Chicago-ish?
From Chicago, right, yeah.
What suburb have you already bonded with Robbie about this?
Yeah, I grew up in Oak Park and in Arlington Heights, which is right by him in Hoffman Estates.
Okay, what did mom and dad do there?
My dad worked in hotel restaurant management. So when I was growing up, he was at Northwestern in food service.
Oh, the college.
Yes. That's actually my first love of football was going on Saturday mornings. He'd have to work and I'd get to go sit with the football team while they had breakfast.
Mm.
Can you imagine like all the cereals being lined out? Like it was like a dream.
Yeah, and watching guys probably consume like 7,000-8,000 calories before practice. You're very Chicago.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought I lost it.
No, right.
You mean like nice?
He could be standing next to Ditka and look like his son, maybe. Sure. You know, that very Midwestern.
Yeah, it's a nice
big
vibe.
White boy. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. I'm from Detroit, so we have our variety as well.
Yeah, we consider ourselves brothers statewise, yes. Right?
Absolutely. Also, high rate alcoholism is standard.
Yeah, well, my dad's family's Milwaukee. My mom's family's East Lansing.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So deep Michigan. A lot of time in Kalamazoo growing up.
Oh, my goodness. I won't bore you with it, but. No, I'm going to bore you with it. I drove around with a homeless guy for an hour and a half interviewing him. And the only reason he trusted me to get him was because he was from Kalamazoo and I was from Michigan.
Wow.
What was in Kalamazoo?
Just great aunts.
Okay, so you...
Such a weird thing you just said with no context.
I know. I kind of like it that way. Just leave that hanging okay. And tell everyone the mystery's revealed. Okay, so you played a lot of sports. I'm sure mom and dad were supportive of all the sports.
Yes.
And you excelled at football.
I did.
And then you ended up going to Harvard to play football.
Yes.
Now, walk me through the selection process. Like, would you have been good enough to go play at Notre Dame? And then you decided, no, I really want the education.
I wish it was that good. I was good enough to play at Eastern Michigan.
Okay,
and Northern Illinois. The MAC was interested. And luckily, my high school coach said, listen, if Harvard invites you to come, you don't turn them down.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, smart.
What kind of grade point did you have coming out of high school?
5 and change. I don't know.
Wait, you can get a 5?
We had a 5-point scale. Grade inflation was happening.
You were a really good student.
I was a student first.
Okay. 5 and change sounds nuts.
I've never heard it go to 5. Well, I've heard like 4.4s with all the AP classes.
It's because of, AP.
It's inflated by AP.
All we A's were on plus a ton scale. Of AP classes.
Yeah.
Okay, you're likable, right? Did you pay any penalty for being that smart? Were you like a nerd? Were you getting shoved in the hallway?
No, luckily. I got big, so I was a jock and I was a nerd. I don't want to go that deep. I had a high opinion of myself in high school.
Okay, good. Cocky? Cocky. Did you have this thing, because I was in a few AP classes, and I definitely think that first day of the AP class, a lot of the kids were like, oh, God, how embarrassing. He's in the wrong class and he doesn't know it. Do you think you were getting any of that when you would walk into these AP classes? Like, oh, fuck, the center of the football team's in the wrong class.
I mean, no one on the football team was in my AP class.
This is really,
for real.
The highest honors I remember looking in my high school was all women and me. It was like 30 women. Wow. That was weird. So I think it was just accepted that I was there. I did get that at Harvard, though. So I do remember football shows up 2 weeks early as practice, and then the rest of the students show up, and we're in the dining hall, and we're last because we came from practice with boisterous, and I hear somebody say, a couple people in front of me, oh, I thought we left those guys behind in high school.
Yeah. If I were them, I would be like, they have jocks here, too. Isn't that why we work so hard? Gonna get shoved into a locker in college?
Sorry, nerds. They're always around.
What was the Harvard experience like? Was it incredible?
It was the best. You're just around the most motivated, talented people you can imagine, and so it's just infectious.
And is the football team competitive? I don't know anything about it.
Yes.
Forgive my ignorance. I never see them in like a Rose Bowl or anything.
No. Oh, we haven't won since 1909.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so don't be that appalled that I'm asking how good they are.
Yes, we at that point we were 1AA, and that was part of a big turnaround to the Harvard program. Now they're one of the best perennially in now what's called FCS.
Don't jump out of the couch and tackle me. Are they Division One?
So there's no more Division One.
Oh, there's
that's
not.
That's the thing. Like, okay. They totally screwed up football. So now it's Football Bowl Series, FBS, and Football Championship Series, FCS.
Okay.
It's the old 1AA. There's a tournament at the end versus bowl games.
Okay, and Harvard plays all these teams I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
No. We didn't play them.
How familiar are you with Lehigh? Sorry, not to knock on Lehigh, but let's do it.
What is Lehigh? Yeah.
It's a nice school in Pennsylvania. Oh, can't get into Harvard. Nice.
An equestrian first school.
Maybe some lacrosse
program.
Okay, yeah.
Well, there was a really interesting Malcolm Gladwell just recently wrote about the absurdity of the numerous sports at Harvard.
Yes.
That they have more sports than any other school. So that there's so many routes in.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Anywho, all right, so you loved it. What degree did you pick up at Harvard?
Sociology. So I saw you were an anthropologist. I love it.
The same distance between Detroit and Chicago, really.
Yeah.
Academically between. It's very close.
I started sociology because my perception was I was trying to figure out what was important in the world and sort of strip down what I was told was important growing up outside Chicago versus what it really is. What do I really care about? What are my values?
Was it culture shocky at Harvard? I mean, I guess you're around Northwestern.
The kitchens.
Right.
I had an idea with classrooms.
What honors program?
Right, that's true. Never mind. You were a shoo-in.
The culture shock for me was wealth.
Yeah.
Right, yes.
Did you have friends that were like, you want to get on the jet and go to Martha's Vineyard with my family?
I wasn't invited, but I heard about it.
Okay.
You know, like, it was talking about that, taking a helicopter down to Newport, Rhode Island for the weekend to the mansion. The first time you're asked, where do you summer?
Yeah,
right.
Summer's a verb.
You never forget that feeling. You don't know how to answer it, then they pity you.
Right. Okay, so how on earth do you get on this MTV show? Oh, another thing we have in common.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Ding, 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 ding.
What's the timing crossover?
He's much younger than me. 9 years, maybe. Are you 41?
No, but thank you. I'm 46.
Oh, only
not
4 years.
Yeah,
okay,
40.
Still in the 70s. You were born in 79?
I'm 78.
All right, we're doing good. Okay, so yeah, how do you end up on MTV?
So I took a real job out of Harvard, life sciences consulting, working for pharma, biotech companies, drug development stuff. Intellectually challenging, but not what I was looking for. I was working for them during senior year, making side money, and we would talk wrestling. I became a really big fan that year.
Growing up, did you love WWF and Hulk Hogan?
It wasn't allowed in my house, so I had two sisters, and I was the only boy, so my mom could control that you're not watching wrestling.
Okay.
I'd go to the cousins, I'd catch it, or the cartoons, so I knew a little bit. But it wasn't a childhood thing. But summer of 99, I lived with five guys in like a two-bedroom, one-bath for football, and we watched Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, and I got hooked because it was like The Rock and Stone Cold.
Oh,
like,
wow.
At their peak. Golden age.
Yeah, it was amazing. So a lunch conversation says, you know, if you don't get drafted in the NFL, because I was a distant prospect.
Yeah,
I think you'd make a great wrestler. Would you ever try that? He knew people because he'd consulted, I think, when Vern Gagne was trying to sell the AWA out of Minnesota, deep cut. He's like, all right, if you don't get drafted, let me know. I don't get drafted. He said, I'll make a call. He calls Jerry Jarrett, who ran the Memphis territory, who calls J.J. Dillon, runs talent for WCW. And they say, hey, we got this 6'5 Harvard guy. I think it'd be good.
Oh, wow.
And so suddenly I've got a plane ticket before I even graduated to Atlanta to the power plant where Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff just beats me up for a day.
Just to train you?
Like a tryout.
Okay, great. Not in front of anybody.
No.
I got to imagine you're appealing. You have the size. Great. You have the athleticism. But what a story. You're from Harvard. They're going to hate your fucking guts. It's like a built-in story.
Yes, although I didn't realize at the beginning I was only going to be a heel if they found out I went to Harvard.
Okay.
That's where the reality show part comes in. Then the test was they would just make you run the ropes till your side's bleeding. They would just see if you're tough.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like performance or anything. And I passed it. I needed shoulder surgery. They're like, 6 months when you're healthy, give us a call.
By the way, you're 22?
I'm 21.
You're 21. You need your first shoulder surgery.
Second.
Oh, Lord.
AC separation?
No, impingement syndrome.
Oh, okay.
I was getting shots while I was doing my training.
Another thing, I've had three shoulder
surgery. Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow. No, you beat me. I hope we fuse at the end of this. Okay, so you needed surgery.
Maybe
you two
should make a pee baby.
We should. It'd explode on the toilet. First trimester, it'd be 12 pounds.
So WCW's going out of business by the time I'm healthy. The hiring freeze and Ted Turner, the whole thing falls apart. So I'm working part-time in this consulting firm. I find Killer Kowalski's wrestling school. I'm going to go in old school. I'm going nights and weekends. So then WWE and MTV partnered to create Tough Enough to sort of bring in the MTV crowd to WWE. And it was just after Real World season 3, but it's hot and Survivor's hot. This is so early in reality show that we had no last names in the show. 13 people live in a house, train with WWE for 13 weeks.
Oh my
God.
And had their whole life filmed, but old school 24 hours surveillance cameras.
Style.
Yeah.
Did you have a romantic? No, there's no women there, right?
Of course.
They have to. It's MTV.
They wanted that. So it was 8 guys, 5 girls.
Okay, they two are on the wrestling track.
Yeah.
And was there any romance happening in the house?
No.
Oh,
they didn't get you drunk enough. They probably hadn't cracked the formula yet.
Yeah, exactly.
The prize was a 3-year contract. And so everyone sort of knew if you're spending your time not focused on the business.
Yeah, but there's always romance, even when there's money.
I would have found time.
As people smartened up the reality show, they might have realized it'd be good for TV for them to do that.
That's what I'm saying. They would have gotten you hammered on the introduction and then, everyone in the
pool for the next
meeting.
Yeah.
This is what year? 99?
So this was 2001.
Okay, what was the value of a 3-year contract at that time with WWE?
We had no leverage, so I think it was like a $100,000, $150,000 a year deal or something.
Okay,
nothing crazy.
30 to 50 grand a year.
A year.
Per year. Okay.
They paid us $600 a week to do the show, and then one person gets dangled.
When you're 21, you're going to make $450,000. That's great.
Yeah.
Of the people that were on this show, how many got that contract?
Two. One male, one female.
And you got... You didn't get the contract.
Sorry.
Wait, but you did end up in WWE.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't get the contract. What then happened?
And the only reason why, now that we look back, is because the show was meant to bring in the wrestling crowd. And so third week of the show, there's two Chrises on the show. They can't differentiate us. And so they tell everyone, start calling him Chris Harvard. Because everyone just called me Harvard. Because I was the only Harvard guy they'd ever met. And I didn't realize that that would be your heel
forever.
I don't
want to be a dick, but maybe the only college grad there.
Okay. That would be my guess. I'm glad you said it.
Elitism. This is why we lost.
You said it. You're the one that said it out loud.
Yeah.
Okay, so the show ends. How big was the show? Were people recognizing you and stuff?
It was the number one show on MTV that year.
It was? What?
I'm really upset I missed it.
Were you going to bars in Boston and people were like so excited?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so
what a fun time.
Yeah. But I was the bad guy in the show. They added me to be a total
villain.
So I didn't get that kind of reaction. It was more like, oh, that guy's here.
You're in Boston. Are dudes trying to challenge you at the bar?
No.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. I haven't been in a lot of real fights. So, yeah, I went and worked the wrestling scene, went back to the old job, and then I get a call like, all right, come do a tryout match around the WrestleMania stuff in Toronto. And so I go work some matches, and they're like, all right, yeah, move to Cincinnati. You're going into the minor leagues. So I got the contract. And then 2 months into that, they're like, all right, you're going on the Monday Night Raw. And I'm like, okay, I've only had 30 matches in my life, but I'm ready.
Whoa.
Yeah. Were you ready? You weren't ready.
Well, I mean, I survived.
As we'll learn, you have a big injury. Is that your fault or his?
I'll take the blame.
It's a dance.
Yeah, but there's multiple hits over time. So some of them are my fault, some of them are not, and they accumulated.
Okay, so this is a question that's been really eating me alive, and you're one of the few people that can really answer this. So we were in Mexico City over Christmas, and we went to the wrestling down there.
Lucha Libre.
I mean, it is wild. I'm watching one match, and I'm like, these guys, there's no way they can walk for like 2 weeks. It's over and over onto the concrete. It's so violent. So what was the violence level in WWE compared to football?
It was night and day. Football is way worse.
Oh, okay.
Because football, you're actually colliding. In wrestling, you're trying not to hurt anybody.
Right.
But I was also there at the time where we weren't as safe as we are today. And so it was real chair shots to the head. And don't put your hand up anymore. You're a coward.
That sounds worse.
And there's high-flying stuff that goes wrong. No?
All the time.
This is what I was seeing, Monica. Guys were running and leaping out of the ring onto the cement floor that would, at that point, be probably 10 feet below them with a fucking 2-inch mat on the ground. Good luck.
Very small margin of error. It's like a million stunts in a row, but you don't rehearse it. And you just sort of hope.
Because they're all improv, right? All these matches, which I think is fascinating. Yeah. Did you watch the McMahon documentary?
Yeah.
What a doc, huh?
How do you think I did in it?
Were you in it?
Oh, this is embarrassing, Dad.
It's not too embarrassing. There's about 150 guys in it. We hadn't met
yet. No, that's right. I'll connect the dots for you.
Yeah. Oh, no, you were in for the CTE stuff.
Yeah. Story. Nobody cares about my wrestling career. I mean, this is the most I've been asked about in a long time.
I know you were in the CTE. Yeah, so I guess that was a stupid question. Did you watch it? But did you deal with McMahon at all in that period?
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy who hired me.
And was he just a good time Charlie? Was he fine to work for?
Yeah. If he liked you, it was fine.
Yeah. Okay, so you cut to the point. You get a pretty gnarly concussion. You get kicked in the head. And what happens?
So I got a bad concussion, but it didn't get better. So I learned later on, I've been getting concussions playing sports and wrestling for a long time. I didn't realize they were concussions. I wasn't educated on them. So I thought, like, as long as my vision went normal or the headache went away, I was okay.
Yeah, what was the conventional measure of whether someone was concussed or not? Blurry vision was one.
Yes, and speech impediment. back then, it was if you were knocked out. That was a concussion. And then if you weren't knocked out, it was a gray area. Okay. You know, you didn't take it too seriously. If you'd still play, you'd never go tell a doctor. It would never get into the system. So it wouldn't count. But this last one, my head was just throbbing all the time. I couldn't remember anything. And so I kept wrestling for a few matches until they sort of realized, something's really wrong with you. Why don't you take some time off?
Was your balance fucked up and your coordination?
Yeah.
So you're now a liability to yourself because you're not functioning correctly.
Right.
So where did that take you?
I took a few weeks off, and then I learned I was accidentally put on the roster for the next weekend shows, and I thought that was a test of, like, get back to work. I went to the doctor, and I'm like, I'm fine, even though I wasn't fine.
Yeah.
And I went and wrestled again for a few more weeks, and I sort of went into the ground. I stopped only because the match I was supposed to do, my manager on the road, Teddy Long, called ahead and like, he's not making sense in the plane. Don't let him wrestle. Yeah. And then that night in the hotel room, I had my first instance of REM behavior disorder.
Tell me about this.
No.
Tell me.
You know how when you're dreaming in your mind, you're moving around and all that stuff, but your body turns off your limbs. That broke. And so I turned back on. And so I would act it out my first dream. Girlfriend I was with at the time was in the room, said she woke up to me standing on the bed trying to climb the wall, couldn't wake me up. And I remember that in my dream, something was falling, I had to catch it. And she watched me head first in the wall, do the nightstand, and not wake up for another 2 minutes. Then I woke up and I'm like, that's chaos. And she's just crying and screaming. And I'm scared to go to sleep. I woke up the next day. I went and told Mickey Mahan what happened to me. And I'm like, oh, you're not wrestling until we figure this out. And by then I'd just done too much and it didn't get better.
Okay, not to spoiler alert, you become a neuroscientist. I'm earmarking that, but let me just ask you really quick. As I recall from biology in college, I was told that all of the cells in your body are somatic. They go through mitosis, but your brain cells do not. They're gray cells, and they don't repair. Is that still what we think? Tell me what happens with the cells in your brain.
They can repair, but they when they die, they don't come back.
They are different from the rest of your somatic cells.
Yeah, well, I only know brain. I don't care about the body.
Anything below that.
What's down here?
Yeah. But the idea is you don't get new brain cells. Now we know you do get some new brain cells. There's some neurogenesis, but it's not nearly as much as we would want it to be.
Yeah.
So when you get like a severe brain injury, you don't come back. You might build new pathways, new dendritic connections to compensate.
Right, you're going to relocate to a non-damaged area of your brain some motor control or some other thing.
Yeah, you build a new network to take over. The neuron is going to get eaten up by the brain. It's gone. Mm. And a new neuron is not going to be its place filling and making those thousands of connections.
Okay, so given that, what was the method to repair the condition you had?
Back in 2003, we didn't really do concussion rehab. It was just sort of like sit in a dark room until you feel better. We've now learned that doesn't really help. And so I just never got better. So I basically would act out my dreams every other night and it was chaos. So I was taking medicine to be sedated and I had a chronic headache all the time. And so after this 12 months of hell, I told them, even if I do get better, I'm probably not coming back to wrestle. If I actually can get rid of this pain, I don't want to lose it.
You're really knowing now, unfortunately, the preciousness of that.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm the idiot who went to Harvard and then destroyed his brain because he wanted to have some fun being a pro wrestler.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I did have a really gnarly concussion, wakeboarding, and I had amnesia for like 14 hours.
Oh, wow.
And I was on like a 3-minute loop and I had the MRI and looked in there and yeah, it was gnarly.
What was the question you kept asking?
I would see I'm in Michigan, but I know I live in California, and I'm with my then girlfriend of 9 years, and I would say, why am I in Michigan? And then my mom was there too, because they were all taking me to the hospital. You're home for my birthday. Why don't I remember that? You were wakeboarding, you hit your head, and then I would say, oh, so it's like the episode of Gilligan's Island where I get hit in the head with a coconut, and I just got to get hit in the head with a coconut again. No laughing. And then I go, that's kind of funny. Have I said that before? Yeah, you've said that like 40 times. Crying. Then, why am I in Michigan? Come out of the crying and straight back. And I was just on this loop for like 14 hours. And then it stopped. And then all those memories that had been happening during that 14 hours were becoming clear.
That's a very common thing. I'll share a similar story because it's actually in that book I just gave you just because it's so wild. That happened to Bubba Ray Dudley, a wrestler. Tables, ladders, chairs match. He forgot his mother died.
Yeah.
Recently, and apparently was going around the show asking people, how's my mother doing? And they all knew she died. He kept reliving his mother's death over and over again until someone figured out, guys, stop answering the question.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so when do you decide that you're going to go back to school and get a PhD in this?
Well, did it ever get better?
That's a good question.
Thank you for asking. I am feeling a lot better.
Okay.
I'm presuming it's better.
Yeah, but you said it never got better.
I still have the REM behavior once in a while. Okay. I wake up think I'm choking to death. I always think something's wrong with my throat. The headaches are mostly gone, but it's more than a decade. I'm doing better. Thank you. So the reason
I shifted. I'm so happy you're better, Chris.
Thank you, Dex. The reason I shifted is because, so there's a doctor who played a very important role in my life, Dr. Bob Cantu. He was the 8th doctor WD sent me to, but the first one to help me understand what I was going through, because every other doctor would ask me, this concussion you had a few months ago, your first one? I'm like, yeah, because I'd never been told by someone in a white coat I had a concussion. He was the first one to say, well, how many times have you been hit in the head and you saw stars, you forgot where you were, you're dizzy, you're confused? And I was like, oh, that happens all the time.
Like yeah. Every day.
Every couple
of
weeks.
A bunch of stories of wrestling matches and football things. So he goes, okay, well, if you had a lot of concussions, it sounds like you didn't take any time off because they weren't diagnosed. I'm like, no. He goes, those two things are bad and they can lead to what you're going through, post-concussion syndrome. And I'm like, really? How am I a Harvard grad who'd been banging my head for 19 years having no idea what a concussion was? That bothered me. And he was like, I don't know what that really means long term. The data is questionable. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to figure this out. So I took what I'd learned from that consulting job and I went over to the Harvard Medical School Library and I started reading every study ever published on concussions to look for the secret.
Wow. Right.
And as I'm digging into that, I'm realizing, oh, we've actually known for 100 years that concussions are bad. We used to take care of them much more seriously than we did before. In the 1950s, the Harvard team doctor for the football program said 3 concussions in your lifetime and you can't play here anymore. You should retire.
Wow.
That's how serious it was in the 50s.
So what happened?
The thing that I could pick up was the NFL was orchestrating a nice big tobacco cover-up about it. It had sparked many times throughout their life. But in the 90s, when Steve Young and Troy Aikman both had problems, they said, all right, we're going to take care of this. And they started a concussion committee full of friendly doctors who were now publishing research in the medical journal Neurosurgery saying there's nothing wrong with concussions. We put half our guys back in who are knocked unconscious. None of them had died. Therefore, there's no long-term effects. And no one's ever developed any problems long-term. And I knew how to read the studies. And I was like, well, these studies are designed to show that finding. If you had to retire mid-season from a concussion, they couldn't follow up with you legally because you were no longer part of the NFL. You would just drop out of the study. You died on the field. You wouldn't fall out.
All undesirable data would be jettisoned from the study.
Yeah. So I got pissed. And so working with Dr. Cantu, learning about all this, I said, all right, I'm going to write a book about this. And that became this book, Head Games, Football's Concussion Crisis, that said, A, concussions are much worse than realized. B, there's this thing, CT, 2 cases have been found. And by the way, the NFL is covering this up. So that was 06 when that came out. Got a $4,000 advance.
Wow.
I paid $21,000 for libel insurance.
Yeah.
Because what the NFL was doing.
Yeah.
But luckily, I was right.
Okay, so when do you pick up your PhD?
In 2017.
Oh,
it's a long leap. And it's because I started a nonprofit, started the research center at Boston University School of Medicine. But I was the guy who just got brains for a brain bank. And literally they had an office and they were like, hey, as long as you're in the building, why don't you just go down the hall and get a PhD? Because the shine's going to wear off of the interesting ex-athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is a concussion?
A concussion is a traumatic brain injury that changes the way your brain functions.
And does it have to require swelling? How would one test for it?
There is no objective test. It's still a clinical diagnosis. But basically, there's 2 things happening. One is there's a chemical cascade and metabolic changes that happen from the energy going through your brain or from your neurons stretching or axon stretching and all these things happening. And then there's also, in probably most cases, physical damage, but not stuff that we can pick up on a standard MRI.
Will you tell me more about the chemical aspect?
The great work was done at UCLA.
I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
In the anthropology it's much better than department. Harvard.
It's interesting. I hadn't heard that. Just to explain, you have 80 some billion neurons in your brain. They all have long projections. Some of them go from your brain down to the bottom of your spinal cord, and they're 1/20th width of a human hair. When they stretch, they get injured, and they open up your channels, so you get too much calcium flooding inside of your neuron, potassium flooding outside your neuron. It's not operating.
So it's becoming porous through the stretching. So now all these chemicals that are inside of it and outside of it start dancing around?
Yes. And the calcium is affecting your mitochondria. So you can't produce energy. The electrical signal's not working right. You get restricted blood flow. The whole thing just sort of is malfunctioning. But it all depends on where it's malfunctioning and how much your brain's impacted to determine symptoms.
Mm. Okay.
So that's why some concussions, you can't remember things because parts of your memory are impaired. But other times it's because you can't see because your visual cortex is impacted.
Are there regions of the brain that are more prone to this damage? When you see concussions, does any area over-index?
Well, your frontal lobe is more sensitive to the trauma.
It's big, it's right in front.
If your brain was a sphere, you'd be a lot better off. But because it's not quite shaped like that and your frontal lobe is sort of hanging off to the front, when your brain moves violently, those axons are more likely to get stretched and twisted. It's not well designed for trauma, and it's also tethered in the back down to your spinal cord and your brain stem, so it's flopping around in there.
Okay, now when I got mine, they put me in the MRI or the C scan or whatever the fuck I got. And what they were looking for particularly is they told me, well, your brain has swollen and the swelling has probably caused some pressure against the area of your brain that has these short-term memories, or that's why. And until it unswells, that's what's going to go on. And then we're looking for bleeding.
They're looking for bleeding for sure to make sure you don't die.
Right, because if you're hemorrhaging in your brain,
you can't
feel
it.
They got to get in there.
Right, and they got to release that or else you're going to have some real long-term problems or could die. So that's what you're usually looking for. But your brain doesn't swell too much from a standard concussion. Most people will never swell.
Okay, so maybe mine, they just were scaring me.
Trying to convince you not to go wakeboarding the next day.
Yeah, I haven't been since. They didn't have to say much.
Yeah, but no, it definitely can swell a little bit. You just wouldn't pick it up much.
Okay, so for people who've had, and we don't know the number, obviously, at some point in your study as we accumulate more things, maybe we'll get some kind of predictive sense, but some multiple concussions result in this CTE.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with CTE.
Yeah, that Monica, I don't know if you know this coming in.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys mentioning it a lot.
Yeah, Monica mentions it a lot. I bring it up a lot to Dax's chagrin.
This is her pork belly.
I do. People don't know enough about it.
We need to have a conversation
they
about
really
it.
They really don't.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop because you earn cash back at over 3,500 stores, fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, travel, dining, concert tickets, and more. Your favorite stores like Lowe's, Levi's, and Nike pay Rakuten to send them shoppers, and Rakuten then passes on a part of that payment to its members as cash back. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? It's a no-brainer. Membership is free and easy to sign up. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Your cash back really adds up.
Lamont Jones's world is shattered when his cousin dies in custody just weeks after entering prison. The official report says natural causes, but bruises and missing teeth tell a different story. From Wondery comes Death County, PA, a chilling true story of corruption and cover-ups that begins as one man's search for answers, but soon reveals a disturbing pattern. Lamont's cousin's death is just one of many, and powerful forces are working to keep the truth buried. With never-before-heard interviews and shocking revelations, Death County, PA pulls back the curtain on one of America's darkest institutional secrets. This isn't just another true crime story. It's happening right now. Follow Death County, PA on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Death County, PA early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
At 24, I lost my narrative, or rather it was stolen from me. And the Monica Lewinsky that my friends and family knew was usurped by false narratives, callous jokes, and politics. I would define reclaiming as to take back what was yours. Something you possess is lost or stolen, and ultimately you triumph in finding it again. So I think listeners can expect me to be chatting with folks, both recognizable and unrecognizable names, about the way that people have navigated roads to triumph. My hope is that people will finish an episode of Reclaiming and feel like they filled their tank up. They connected with the people that I'm talking to and leave with maybe some nuggets that help them feel a little more hopeful. Follow Reclaiming with Monica Lewinsky on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Reclaiming early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Okay, so what is the full arc of the condition? And like, what are the mechanisms that are happening in the brain?
CTE is a degenerative brain disease that is caused by repetitive traumatic brain injuries, right? So it's only seen in association with a lot of hits to the head. So one of the important things to say right away is that one concussion is not causing CTE in almost anybody. Because now we've looked back at brain banks, and even ones where people have had a severe brain injury from a car accident or something, and you just almost never see it.
Although you did say one concussion doubles your outcome for suicide.
Yes.
That's fucked up.
Really?
Yeah.
One concussion. And I know I've had.
Okay.
That's not the only one I've ever had.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Although the incident rate for suicide, you know, group of 100,000, it's still quite low. So it's even still if you rare. Double it, it's still a low number. Don't get too worried.
Yeah.
A lot of people have had concussions.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting to know.
That data is usually from hospitalized concussions, which you had. And the theory is there's sort of two things going on. One is that maybe it's changing the way your brain functions, and maybe you're in chronic pain. Headaches is very much associated with suicide. So maybe there's some of that going on. And then on the other side, though, it might affect your life in a big way. It might affect your job, your relationships. Your circumstances have changed.
Right.
But then also we get into a correlation causation problem, which is I'm sure there's something we could say about people who accumulate concussions. People that are drawn to that lifestyle are probably doing a whole suite of behaviors.
It is complicated to unravel. So we don't want anyone to think suddenly you got one concussion, you're going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so you get multiple injuries.
For some reason, football being probably the best example, I took 10,000 hits to my head. One of those hits was hard enough to spark this inflammatory process around a blood vessel at the depths of the sulcus in my frontal lobe is where we usually find the beginnings of it.
Is that generally, if you have CT, that is where it's...
Yeah, that's where the first lesions will show up, dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, which again, we think is part of the physics issue. That part of your brain is most likely to stretch. Like rats don't get CTE because they don't have that fold. So the depths of the sulcus, the energy of a rapidly rotating brain causes it to go to that bottom of the valley, and that's where you see the initial lesion. And then for some reason, that lesion will keep spreading in the absence of further hits.
Oh,
we think in most cases.
Explain that.
We don't exactly know.
Atrophy begets atrophy.
Misfolding proteins can act like a virus and can continue to spread. So you have a protein called tau in your axons and neurons that's sort of a structural element. And when the axon stretches, that tau can misfold. And then it's sort of like a crack in a windshield that it just keeps spreading.
Ooh.
And it can actually jump the synapse and go to another neuron. And so we don't understand. We can't diagnose this during life, which is why we're trying to get brains for study. So we only have these windows into, at the time of death, what do we see? But now we pick up these small lesions in teenagers. If you look at now over 1,500 brains.
Dead teenagers.
Okay, yes. Okay. You see that the older people have a lot of it. The younger people have these tiny lesions, and you can see the spread.
Now, just to be a skeptic, what is our control group? What are we making this relative to? We have other brains, but we don't totally know the history of their impact. Are we seeing most people don't have any of these lesions?
Right. The good news is, at the beginning, we were a little more in the dark. But one of the great things at Boston University, where we have this brain bank led by Anne McKee, she leads five other brain banks. And one of them is the Framingham Heart Study. Have you heard of this?
No.
So the town of Framingham outside Boston has been followed for generations. And now they're old enough where they're dying.
Thank God.
And that's where
I'm just joking.
That's where we learned all about how high blood pressure has later life implications for stroke and other things, because we were following this town. So when we first published that group, there were 164 people who'd passed away in the study. One of them had CTE. And we also went back to everyone and asked about sports history, brain injury history. That person was a college football player.
Now let's jump really quick to the first 111 NFL brains you looked at. How many had CTE?
110.
So one out of 147 versus 110 out of 111. I'm sold.
I've been saying this.
For people who have not seen the images, they're taking these thin slices of the brain and they're putting them next to each other. And a healthy section of this brain would be kind of just white. And then if you have a mild case of CTE, you're seeing some discoloration. But in an extreme CTA, you're seeing like it's been dipped in coffee, and then there's just pockets of saturation of this dark stuff. It looks like the lung of a smoker.
That's what I compare it to when I show healthy lungs and diseased lungs to help people appreciate how abnormal this is. When the NFL used to bring in international experts to tell us this is all fake, one of them would refer to as the gingerbread brain for this Hall of Famer who died in his 90s, whose brain had shrunk to like almost half its size and was all brown. This is just impossible. Like, they must be faking it.
Oh my God.
That's actually how sad it is.
And he made it to 90.
Well, he's in this institution for 20 years.
Oh.
And then this is relevant to bring up because we're in the early explanation of it. So this was observed, and I grew up hearing this because my dad loved boxing. We called people punch drunk.
Right.
And so just talk about what that was.
So punch drunk was first published in a major medical journal in 1928.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah, they figured it out very early
that
boxers were getting very strange. Slurred speech, movement disorders, bizarre behaviors. There's a lot of literature from the 20s, 30s, 40s about punch drunk, then dementia pugilistica. They didn't really start looking at brains as much until the 70s. There was a famous case series of it where they sort of talked about all these abnormal brains from boxers. But the problem was no one really dug into it. What defines CT is this abnormal tau protein. We didn't know how to see the protein until the late 70s.
We didn't have
so it wasn't the original part of the diagnostic criteria because we hadn't invented the antibodies that make it show up. So it's a lot of reasons why that didn't happen. But also in 1984, the American Medical Association said boxing shouldn't exist. It's too barbaric. It was sort of at that point that research on boxing stopped. And so it was like, yep, boxers get punch drunk. Well, end of story.
Yeah.
Occupational hazard.
Nobody connected the dots to the fact that all these other sports.
You're also looking at a pretty small group of people versus high school football, which is millions of people.
Right.
It's not like that many people go into boxing.
I agree that the social part of it is like they're punching each other in the head. They really don't expect to have problems?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they signed up for
That's
it.
That's right. The problem.
It's not an epidemic.
And it wasn't like there was the sons of doctors off doing it.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just like this other part of the culture.
Okay, so what are the symptoms that people with CTE experience?
This has evolved over the last 15 years as we figured this out. But basically, the one thing that is best predicted when you have CT pathology is cognitive decline. It'll start with executive dysfunction, meaning you're no longer making good decisions. Your career goes to hell.
Make dumb investments.
Very common. So executive function goes and then memory goes. Short-term memory first, but start to lose episodic memory, long-term memory. That is very frequent with end-stage CTE. And then we also see neurobehavioral dysregulation. Impulse control problems, anger issues.
This is the stuff that seems to get the headlines. And I'll say that anecdotally, we know someone that was married to a very successful football player, and they had a total personality shift.
They died.
Yeah, he died. And you hear about this, I see it on Real Sports. There's violence all of a sudden. People who have never been violent are getting violent to their family. They're getting violent around town. They're self-harming. The addiction is spiraling. You're seeing a real tornado of depression and just the personality shift. I think that's the scariest thing.
Yeah.
People are married to these men that they love that were so kind, and all of a sudden they're erratic and impulsive and scary.
Well said, because one of my talking points is often that the number one thing you see is personality change, but that's not diagnosable condition.
Yeah.
So it's not like in our data, but they always say he's a different person.
Yeah, because you go like, okay, memory loss, to what degree? You can live with that. But that aspect, and then I have to imagine the suicide rate for people with CT has got to be among the highest.
Actually not true. That's something they're actually trying to help.
Oh, really?
Part of it is that a lot of the early cases were suicide cases. The third brain I ever procured was Chris Benoit, the wrestler who killed his wife and 7-year-old son and himself.
Oh my God. Tell us that. I mean, I guess you did just tell us that.
It's a complicated story. When I was writing that book, he was the only guy in the locker room. I'd show up for shows once in a while. Half people welcomed me, half people thought I was lying and stealing a check and faking my injury. But he was the guy who took me seriously and sat me down and said, what are you learning about concussions? How many have you had? I asked him how many he had. He said, more than I can count. I'd known him for 5 years. He gave me his phone number. He goes, call me next week. I want to talk about it. I called him. Sounded like he was in the middle of an argument with somebody. He's like, I'll call you back. And he never called me back. And then months later, he killed his entire family. Killed his 7-year-old. Killed himself over 48 hours, left Bibles and strange statements. And then more or less I've talked to, he was falling apart. He wouldn't plan matches anymore because he couldn't remember them. So he would just say, let's wing it.
It's so sad to me. He knew, though, something was wrong.
He knew something was wrong, and I didn't help him. And that sort of sparked. Now I have 5 full-time people just to deal with people who reach out to us. We make sure we do everything we can to help them because this keeps happening.
If someone were to recognize in a moment of clarity that this was happening to them, are there medications that could help?
Yes. The advice for everybody is treat the symptoms. So whatever the symptoms are, there's probably medication to work and make your life better. So on the suicide front, even though that's all the high-profile stuff, Dave Duerson, Jr. say,
you hear these wild cases where the dudes shoot themselves in the heart because they know they want their brain studied?
Yeah, that's something we discourage. We don't need those brains anymore. That was a troubling trend that started. But I've now learned it was like a conversation that a bunch of them had together.
Really?
Yeah. Because they were all mad at the NFL for lying about everything back then. And so let's show them. So everyone's shooting themselves in the chest. We're trying to say, look, CT symptoms can be treatable. We can't stop the disease.
Yeah. Yet.
We need to work on that. There's help and there's hope. Yeah. So anyone struggling, that's why we have a helpline. Reach out to the Concussion Legacy Foundation helpline. We will find you something and we will help make your life better. But we do keep seeing these suicides. But the actual overall rate of NFL suicide is not that much higher than the population.
I mean, OJ definitely had it, right?
Yeah, I think it's impossible that he didn't. And I think it sort of puts his life in perspective.
It does. I don't know what would have changed with the trial, but I do think if we had known then that that's clearly at play here, we would have looked at it much differently.
We would have looked at it differently. Like, it doesn't mean that you don't go to prison.
You're not allowed to kill your ex-wife.
Yeah.
Well, apparently you are because he got off.
Yeah.
But it would have been an interesting part
of
it.
Yeah, it forces you to look at a lot of the things we've seen with a lot of the people we've seen them with. Mike Tyson, a lot of these boxers that have had episodes that are inexplicable, you have to imagine there's a lot going on.
And it's not just CTE. Brain injury itself, in the absence of CTE, can cause a lot of this stuff.
What positions in football do you track those? Obviously, the kicker has very low risk of getting this.
The kickers haven't been exempted from this because in the old days, the kickers were former position players. And in the new days, they're all former soccer players.
Oh.
They've headed the ball too much. But actually, we cannot find CT trends by position. Even though linemen get hit maybe twice as much as other positions, but the average hit is bigger for those positions. But there's also a missing piece of data that people didn't realize that sort of explains why we don't see it by position. Can you guess what that is?
Maybe because they've all played different positions before they landed in those positions?
That's part of it. What you played in the NFL is not what you played as a kid.
Yeah, you see all these stories. This was a layer of racism where these incredible black quarterbacks would come into the league and they're like, you're not going to be a quarterback because you don't have the brain to run an offense.
Right. They all became wide receivers and running backs.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
The other part is special teams. Kickoffs and punts are actually the most violent plays. But it's random who goes on those, and it's not tracked. When I did my interview, because I'm going to be donating my brain, it's like, so how many weeks were you on kickoff for your junior high school? And I'm like, I don't remember. I was on this week, I was off this week. Kickoff's very fluid. Special teams changes all the time. Only in the NFL are there a handful of specialists to do special teams. Otherwise, it's usually the backups.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think that is actually skewing our data. Some linemen are gunners or wedge busters in the old days and all these things that were very violent.
Yeah. Now, how did the sports compare to one another? Is football the worst? Where's NHL? Where's boxing? Where's soccer?
We don't have enough data. And especially because we can't diagnose the living people. But for football, we've looked at now over 400 NFL brains, and 93% of them have had it. But we just published our first study of NHL players, and it was 18 of 19. So it's actually a higher percentage.
I grew up around hockey more than football. Concussions are standard. Because you're falling, you're hitting the ice.
Yeah, the ice is way worse than any football hit. And you're going faster because you're skating faster than you run.
Fuck yeah, those guys are flying and hitting the back of their head on the plexiglass.
Yeah.
Why can't we look at the brain while the person's living?
You'd have to go in and do a brain surgery.
We are trying.
I feel like scan technology has gotten so good, and like fMRI, but no, we're close. We're not there.
The problem is no one's done the work. The CT stuff shut down in the 70s, and we've started the first academic center back in 2008. So there's no research on this. For Alzheimer's, none of these diseases can be diagnosed definitively during life. Only until very recently when we started imaging beta amyloid plaques, which was a breakthrough a little over a decade ago.
Tau's part of that as well.
Right. So we've been piggybacking off of a lot of Alzheimer's research to try to catch up. So we don't even know the pattern of atrophy to distinguish it from Alzheimer's, right? It's frontal, it's temporal, but we don't actually know. So we will figure this out probably much sooner than we realize, but we can't right now. So soccer's bad if you're a prolific header. Boxing's bad if you take a lot of punches. There's also a dose response issue going on with that. So the reason why 90-some percent of NFL players have it, because they've all played 20 more years. The fewer years you play, the less risk. So when we study the high school football players' brains, it's a minority of them, although it's still far more than I'm comfortable with.
And I did hear once, maybe it's sort of the opposite of what you're saying, that you think if you haven't gone to the NFL that you're in the clear, but you may have started in rec league. You may have started when you were 5 years old. And so you've still had a long time playing.
That's exactly right.
And wasn't one of the things that we've learned since we started studying this is it's not these big concussions necessarily, that it's also just repetitive smaller hits.
It's repetitive hits, but not smaller. So actually a talking point I've been trying to drive into our team for the last year is that when you actually look at the sensor studies, what we find out is that the average concussion with linear acceleration is happening at about the 90th percentile. So let's say it's 100 Gs. If that's what's happening, if you're a football player, you take 1,000 hits over a season, that means you took 100 hits harder than that concussion, that other 10%. I think that's what's causing a lot of the CT risk. It does take hard hits to cause physical damage to your brain.
Well, that's comfortable.
But most of them you can't feel because you don't have pain nerves in your brain. And so when one neuron dies, you can't feel it.
So you just said 100 Gs. Is that the scale we're looking at?
Yeah, 100 Gs in a few milliseconds.
Oh my God, because you think of these F1 drivers are pulling 5 Gs and their necks are this thick because they're dealing with 5 Gs.
That's over a much longer period of time.
Yeah, yeah. Some of those impacts can create 100 Gs.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Now, is the onset period of this condition, do we know, is it age related or is it duration from impact related?
There is a delay between when you get the damage, when you start having symptoms, and there's a lot of variables that contribute to that, including your overall brain health and aging and vascular disease, cognitive reserve. So if you're smarter, you'll have delayed symptoms versus other people because your brain's wired better. And so you can lose more neurons before you start showing functional problems.
Right.
So we don't actually know when the onset of symptoms is from CT, especially because everyone who gets CT has taken these thousands of hits and also has other types of brain damage in there, like frontal lobe white matter damage, that would be obvious for some of these symptoms. When you think about, there's four pathological stages of CT. Stage 3 and 4, everybody's got some symptoms. The more you have, the worse off you are. Stage 1 and 2, you're usually younger than 40. You also have white matter damage. You also have all these other things. And we don't know if it's the CT lesions themselves that are contributing to everything, or the white matter damage, or these other types of brain damage that we see. So the onset of when CT starts affecting you is a little bit unknown.
Well, now I want to say, so you took it upon yourself once learning about this. And at the time, I think you said there was only 2 or 3 brains that have been studied for CTE.
There were 2 NFL players, and there were 45 brains in the world where they'd found CTE.
And you kind of appointed yourself the person that was going to have to try to go out and get more brains to be studied, which meant that you were in a position to start calling family members of people, mostly football players, who had died to ask the family if you could have their brains.
Yeah.
I want to know a few of these stories. I mean, if there's one in particular, but I wrote down Aaron Hernandez, Demaryius Thomas, Vincent Jackson, Ken Stabler, any of these. I would love to hear someone's personal story with this.
Not everybody's on that list that I call. Part of what I'm doing is trying to set up a system so they call us. Maybe to start with the first conversation, because it's on public record. These are all very sensitive, intimate conversations.
Absolutely.
The first call was the family of Andre Waters. So do you remember him from the Eagles, strong safety?
No.
Okay.
I'm sure a lot of people do, but we don't.
I know from researching you, he had a great nickname.
Yes, Dirty Waters, because he liked to lead with his head.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So for my 85 Bears, in the late 80s, he was a nemesis. The Eagles were beating him. So Andre Waters takes his life. I just wrote the book, and no one cares about the book. And I'm trying to think, like, are I walking away and moving on with my life, or am I going to stick with this? And so he dies by suicide. He's still a Division II football coach. He's employed. There's nothing obvious on the surface. I called the medical examiner in Hillsborough County, Florida, and I said, hey, you should study his brain. And he's like, no, this is crazy. He'd never heard of this. But after multiple conversations over many weeks, because I was just trying to see if I was right, I was like, can I convince this guy that I'm right? He said, well, it just so happens that I know Waters was buried 2 weeks ago, but we kept part of his brain. And I will give it to you. I'm now convinced that this is worthy of study. If you can get someone to study it and you get his family's permission. And I'm like, all right. So I called. The only doctor I knew at the time was the doctor from the concussion movie, Bennett Omalu. So I called him and I said, we study his brain. He said, yeah. I said, all right, here's his mother's phone number. She's 88. Give her a call. And he goes, no, he wouldn't make the call. The other doctor to work with, no one wanted to make that call. Yeah. So that's how I got stuck making the call.
You're calling the mother of someone who just lost their son to suicide.
She doesn't even realize that not all of them's buried. That's even a revelation itself.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Yeah, the medical examiner keeps tissue? Like, what? I just remember, like, I can't be a coward about this. And so I cold called his mother. Luckily, she didn't answer, because I just had this vision that she would just, like, listen to me and, like, just drop dead.
Yeah.
And instead, a sister answered, and I had written a script, and I'm like, hey, I'm just this guy you've never heard of, and I have no medical credentials, but I think his brain should be studied. First, his sister answers, and she listens. She goes, hold on. I'm not the right person in the family. She got somebody else on, his niece, and his niece had some medical training, and over a couple of days, I convinced him to do it.
Wow. I would imagine, as scary as that call is to make, any family member of someone who just die by suicide would love an explanation.
Yeah.
They were so happy that someone cared to find out maybe there's more to this.
It's almost like finding the killer of someone who was murdered.
Right. And then they started saying, well, you know, he was getting lost driving to the house. He bought his mother to his own house. All these things weren't adding up for them. So luckily they were so nice about everything and so appreciative that I was like, all right, I can keep calling families. And so now I've called a lot of families.
Yeah, how many NFL brains, I guess college too, you've gotten a lot of those?
Our brain bank now is 1,600 brains. We're getting close to 500 former NFL players. But what's actually most interesting is this is not widely known, but since a certain date, we've gotten 1 in 4 NFL players who've died.
Okay. And then you get the idea to start a pledge. Tell us about that.
I also realized, like, I don't want to be calling people within 48 hours of their loved ones passing for the rest of my life.
Yeah. How do I get out of this is what you were motivated by.
I hate doing this. I don't want to do this anymore. Because I still read the obituaries every morning out of habit. It's, like, really terrible. It's a weird way to start your day.
Yeah.
Although it could fill you with gratitude.
Yeah, well, it does make you appreciate that you're alive that day. So I started asking all the athletes I knew if they would pledge their brain, basically trying to create a culture of brain donation in America among famous athletes.
Yeah.
So that they would realize that this stuff, it's important and it's happening. And so it started with people I all knew very well. And now we have 13,000 people who've pledged to donate their brain, probably more than we could ever take.
Yeah, it's incredibly successful. And then throughout many other sports, like Dale Earnhardt Jr. has agreed to do it.
But I should pause here and ask. Part of my gimmick is I ask everybody, now that you guys are part of an Alzheimer's study, have you also considered donating your brain?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
I would totally donate.
We just did a moral dumbfounding question by Jonathan Haidt of someone having sex with a corpse. And I was like, I really don't care what happens to my body afterwards. So if I'm willing to have that happen, yeah, absolutely.
That went in a different direction than I was expecting.
I'm showing you how low the bar is for me. So
no,
absolutely.
If my brain could be of any help, why wouldn't I?
Monica was a high-flying cheerleader.
I was about to say, that might be a group that needs some study. Obviously, a lot of those are girls and women, it might even present differently. So that would be interesting to see.
There's a huge concussion problem in cheerleading, especially the Flyers, or if you're the one catching, you were flying.
Yeah. Did you watch that cheerleading doc that was popular?
No.
Cheer.
It's called Cheer on Netflix. It's incredible. And you go, oh, these gals are doing something more dangerous than the football players.
Yeah.
And no one even is noticing what's happening.
It's clearly not thought through, right?
Yeah.
There's no regulation.
They don't practice with helmets on. We got in a fight about they got to practice.
You can't because aerodynamics, but I know.
But you can't tell the football players they got to have these.
I know. But even more than stunts, you're tumbling and you fall all the time. I fell on my head so many times trying to do a backflip. Just learning. You fall.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in this brain.
Yeah.
I got to get my
You can have access to it.
We've never seen CT in a cheerleader. We haven't had many brains donated. It's a new phenomenon. So we don't have 70-year-old cheerleaders who are doing this, which is a whole other issue. So it's something we got to look into, but I'm hopeful it's not a huge problem.
Well, I'm delighted to donate my brain. Do I have to officially go to a website or something?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Tell me how to do it.
I think it's donateyourbrain.org, but I'll send it to you and I'll make sure I get that right.
Yeah. Okay.
But we'd be honored to have you.
Double check, my children have no plans for my brain. Well, they sign up on it.
Most people say, let me check with the wife and they'll never get back to you. So I appreciate it.
My wife will be like, get that fucking brain.
Are they going to do with your brain?
Reanimate me when the technology exists.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So you've gotten this pledge. What's happening in Europe? And obviously, rugby, Australian rules, football, soccer is global. It's not like this is an American issue. What's the rest of the world think about all this?
Well, they tried to frame it as an American issue. So one of the tricks the NFL played is they brought in Australian doctors and British doctors who would say, this isn't in our country, so this is not real. So I went and started brain banks around the world. And so one of them was in Australia because that was the big bad guy who was coming in and saying, this is fake, this is fake. Mm. So we started a brain bank in 2018. And by 2020, we diagnosed the first cases in Australian rules football, the first case in rugby league. We now have a brain bank at Oxford. It's been seen now in rugby.
Is it a comparable percentage? I shot a movie in New Zealand for 4 months and I got super into watching rugby. And I was like, well, this is the ultimate gladiator sport. I mean, these guys have nothing on. They must have enormous rates of this.
We don't know because we just started the rugby research. And are you aware that it's only been professional for a little while?
No. As you've learned, I know very little about these masculine sports.
I didn't know this either until recently.
I know about BMX and skateboarding.
So rugby was like a gentleman's thing until turn of the century. Everyone's 180 pounds and they're sort of tackling.
Hugging each other.
But since then, they've all become 280-pound monster football players who train constantly.
And they're fast as hell.
The professionalization of rugby has made CT a huge problem. We still see it in the older guys. By comparison, we've looked at nearly 1,000 American football players' brains and we've looked at 50 rugby brains. Mm. But it was about half and it was how long you played. Your odds went up 14% per year you played.
We just diagnosed
the first New Zealand rugby case too at our brain bank at University of Auckland.
Okay, so now we can get into a fun liberty question and what is the future and what would you advise? Because obviously for children, that's one conversation we have about children. We would agree they're not old enough to make this Faustian deal.
I would agree.
And there are a lot of people that I couldn't argue back if they go, yeah, my life fucking sucks without this thing. And I'm an adult and I want to do it. And I take on the risk and fuck you, I have liberty. And I can't really stand in the way of that. I am of that mind. How do we deal with all these facets of the problem?
I'm of the same mind. When people ask me, do we end football? I said, no. I used to let people hit me in the head with folding chairs for a living, and I thought it was fun. And that wasn't nearly as dangerous as cops and firemen and people going to military service. If you want to do a dangerous job to support your family, great. But let's not lie to you about the risks, and let's take reasonable precautions, and let's give you a voice to negotiate those precautions. Unions. That's why the NFL has gotten safer, is there's a union. So totally fine with the NFL continuing as a business and players having informed consent. But you're right. The problem that we cannot reconcile is that everybody who played in the NFL made that choice to start playing as a child. And once you're on the train, we all know it's really hard to get off. In a culture that says quitters are terrible.
And let's be honest, it might be the greatest part of someone's whole time on planet Earth.
It might be.
I still know people. It's like the greatest years of their life were being on that team and doing that. So it has some value that needs to be acknowledged.
Yes. Team sports are amazing for the connections and the physical health, but getting hit in the head, there's nothing good about that.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the question becomes, when and how do you get into this?
So they've done a lot of cool things, right? Like practices have changed.
At the highest levels they have, but they have not gone all the way to the bottom. As an umbrella, our campaign to change the sports is called Stop Hitting Kids in the Head.
Stop Hitting Kids in the Head.
I love that.
There's just no reason. Like, do you hit your daughters in the head?
Not intentionally.
You can probably count how many times they've ever been hit in the head.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's really abnormal for kids to get hit in the head outside of sports. Even in old cases of abuse, if you hit your kid in the head a lot, they would stop showing up. So I think it's safe to say we're hitting children in the head more than we ever have in the history of time.
Wow.
1,000 hits to the head in a year is hard. So let's make reasonable reforms. Driving is actually a really good analogy for this. I think it's sort of like, when do you start driving a car? Well, there's no age at when it magically starts becoming safe. And so in some states it's 16, some states 17. We've looked at data. We think about brain maturity. We think about all these things. And so we should think about that for all the sports. We shouldn't repetitively hit kids in the head probably till 14. That is a good neuroscience perspective for brain development and a little bit uninformed consent. It sort of becomes more reasonable to start taking risks at that age. Mm-hmm. But the idea that you take a five-year-old and put a five-pound helmet on him and have him get hit in the head 200-300 times a year doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Because the risks are serious. You are actually increasing your risk of CT. And the rewards, you can get that from flag or some other sport and then have your period of time where you get to play the rough sport. Football is not the problem. It's too much football. One season might be too much for some people, but usually it's double digits when you start getting into real risk of CTE. So start later and hit less.
Would one bit of advice for soccer be like no heading the ball until a certain age?
In 2015, we got U.S. soccer to say no heading until 11. So that's a thing.
Okay.
We asked for 14. We got 11. We'll still push for 14 as the data accrues.
Yeah.
But there's limits at 11, 12, and 13. Only you're supposed to do like 20 a week. But even 20 a week is 1,000 a year.
Too many.
Still can be.
Yeah, what the hell?
Right. We're actually saying, let's actually start counting it, which we might be able to start doing with like AI and two-dimensional video. It's analogous to pitch counts. In Little League, if you're a coach, when your kid pitches, you have to count each one. And you have to send it to the league office because they were realizing it was destroying elbows.
Yeah, Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. Right. Their response to that was pitch counts. So we count how many times kids throw a ball to protect their elbow. We do not count how many times any child is hit in the head in sports.
That's
And now that soccer's, you know, you can play four seasons a year now. It used to be in high school, it was one.
Yeah, my daughter's buddies, some of them are four leagues all year round.
We're not monitoring that. Could be getting more exposure in soccer than you are in football. My kids play soccer. They can't head now. But when they can start heading, my advice could be don't head.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell your coach, no, it's not for me. I'm going to play it off my chest. I'm going to control it better anyway. This whole idea that projectile coming at your head, you should knock back, is very abnormal.
Yeah, using your head as a baseball bat, basically. Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
So what we see, too, and it has to be acknowledged, is the demographics of the sport are changing because educated white people with means are not letting their kids do this. And we're seeing it change pretty dramatically. Who's actually playing the sport is disenfranchised, disadvantaged kids more and more.
That's true. HBO Real Sports did a nice piece with us.
Yeah,
that was part of that piece where they said the percent of kids on food stamps who were playing tackle football in Illinois was starting to dramatically go up, changed by 10% over only a few years because people with options started to realize my kid could do another sport, get the same benefits without the risk. It is a cultural conversation needs to be had because then that quickly goes to, but it's their way out.
Right. That's always the next sentence.
It's a legitimate argument.
It is, except for my next response is, but no one's getting recruited off their film when they were seven.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you could go flag into that. I think people aren't thinking about it deeply enough to realize that, yes, it can be a way out, but it doesn't become serious till high school.
Also, if there's just a regulation that that can't happen till you're 14, then everyone is still starting on the same playing field.
I guess the reason I bring it up is to say, yes, there's liberty until you observe that only certain people have liberty and don't have liberty. Like when you're seeing that some people don't have an option and other people do have an option, there is some societal obligation to protect the people that are most vulnerable. That's what I'm getting at is these are necessary because you're asking people who are in a position where they've got to risk it all to make these decisions when they have much bigger fucking fish on their plate, you know, whatever the goddamn saying.
Fish to fry.
One of the ways to look at that, there was a study by CDC showing in white communities, you're more likely to have both flag and tackle and you have a choice. But in black communities, you only had tackle. You don't have the option. You're either playing tackle or you're not playing football at all, which in some cases might be worse for various reasons.
It's one thing to say, oh, they were told the risk and they made a decision. But if you acknowledge that some people are in a worse position and they're more incentivized to make that decision, that has to be accounted for.
We also have to add, when people say, yes, it's their way out because they're vulnerable, they need the pathway. It goes, yes, but you're talking about vulnerable people who already have problems. Let's layer on brain injury. That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Brain injury can lead to these other problems down the road. So don't take our most vulnerable people and layer on 5,000 hits to the head for that tiny chance they can turn into a living.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. What is that percentage? Do you know it off the top of your head? I mean, it's under 1% of kids who enter the football in their school are going to end up in the NFL.
It's 0.1 or something. So small.
This is such an important topic.
I appreciate all your research on this, too. I know it's a dive.
I like it.
So this is like a really maybe bad question. Do you think you have it?
That's not a bad question. I have to wrestle with that every day. It waxes and wanes. Some days I'm like, yes, maybe not. My problem is it got very real a few years ago because one of my college roommates died. He was the Harvard football captain my senior year. We shared that room when we were all watching wrestling in 99. He played 3 years in the NFL. He was Tom Brady's housemate when they were rookies with the Patriots, and then didn't work out for injuries. And so then he went and got his MBA from Dartmouth, and then he ran the hedge fund, the perfect life, married his high school sweetheart, 4 kids. And then we found out he had a secret drinking problem. And it got so bad that it killed him, even after interventions and everyone becoming aware. So the perfect guy, the Superman, ended up drinking himself to death. He had stage 2 CT.
Oh my God. Basically
had the same sports experience. He played 11 years of football. I did my years of football and my wrestling. And the fact that more of those guys seem to have it than don't. The guys who have my history, definitely more than 50% in our brain bank have had it. And then I just have to ask the question of how biased is our brain bank? Right now, I don't think people look at me and think I have it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem it.
Maybe only my wife, so I don't know.
Well, you have to acknowledge that same stimulus input results in some different output because we're so variable. So like tens of millions of people smoke the same amount of cigarettes and some percentage get small cell carcinoma. I don't know. There's a lot of factors in there.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not so predictive of the symptoms.
Well, not predictive of symptoms, the pathology.
Yeah, for sure the condition, but not the symptoms per se.
Correct. I think there's a very good chance I have it. If I showed you my MRI from 20 years ago, I'd be like, that does not look normal. But I don't have symptoms, or at least ones that are overwhelming me.
Yeah.
But that's part of my passion and race to find a cure. It's like, I still might have 10, 20 years before it clubs me over the head to find something that actually stop it so that I can just have what I have.
Your best defense is that you have a wife that's highly educated on this.
And you are.
And as an outside observer. I think it gets hard to observe yourself. But you have a partner who's hip to all these things to look for, presumably.
Yeah, but she's also got to be completely in denial to choose to marry me.
Well, she hasn't proven to be.
We had that talk, though. When I proposed, I was like, now, look, I don't know where this is going to go, because this was more than 10 years ago now. We had even less knowledge. And I'm like, I might have this. I might lose my mind. Chris Benoit thing, it happened a couple years prior.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know where I'm going to be at 40. Now, past that, I don't know where I'm going to be at 50. It is scary to think about sometimes.
Right.
Okay, so that did bring me to the final thing I want to talk about is this isn't just for athletes, right? There are occupations that over-index in concussions. All my friends in the movie business are all stuntmen. I can't tell you how many concussions these guys get. They'll go unnamed, but yeah, there's one friend that we've had where a few of us have talked, and I'm like, this feels a little loopy. Was anyone else noticing this? And we know of many, many concussions. Anyone who's doing like motorcycle shit, you're going to deal with that. So what occupations, military, fire and rescue?
So we're starting to look into that. CT's been seen in some military people who do not play sports, but were like artillery or special forces, a lot of explosions. So it can happen. It's much more rare than football, but it's definitely there. We are looking into more first responders. We have gotten some firemen and police who've had a lot of concussions, but I don't think we have a case yet. So hopefully it's not as bad. We've actually seen it in people on the autism spectrum just banging their heads all the time.
Yeah,
of course.
But it is probably out there. I'm hoping it's rare. There are some jobs where you're getting hit in the head quite a bit, but it's not anywhere near boxing and football.
Well, also because probably you don't start those jobs till you're older.
That's a great point. Your brain's not as protected against those hits when you're young. The sheath around your axon, this type of cell that grows there, isn't there when you're young. And so those stretches are worse. But we have diagnosed a stuntman with CTE. He was also a football player.
Well, again, most of these stuntmen are coming from a different high-risk
background.
Exactly.
Be happy to help your friend if you want to connect us.
Oh, he's open. That's interesting, yeah. I wonder how open he would be to that. That's a vulnerable thing to acknowledge.
It's a hard thing to bring up to people.
Well, it is a hard thing to bring up because, as you say, there's no cure. You know, and there's no cure for things. You're really disincentivized to even know about it. Because why? So you can worry more about it?
Right. And the studies have shown that with genetic studies for Alzheimer's, some people respond of, okay, I'm going to use this and take the time I have and really enjoy it. Other people can't handle it. And it just becomes their obsessive thought that, oh my God, I'm going to get this.
I think for some reason, hearing that it's connected to the brain, that really scares people, obviously. But like you said, it's still a matter of just treating the symptoms, though, and you should especially if you know it's something happening in your brain, then you can't just think your way out of it.
Right. And sometimes we do a little bit of selective framing where we say for something like that, transition can be really hard from careers. And so a lot of guys go through this depression, actually, let's go see this doctor to try to help figure it out. They'll do the cognitive test. They'll give us a window into actually could see part of this.
Well, right. So everyone who leaves the NFL is going to get depressed. They had a purpose. They had a schedule. They had teammates. They had community. But CBT or therapy will help with those. And if that doesn't help with those, then you're going, well, there's probably some kind of structural issue that's probably not going to respond to that type of treatment or therapy. Okay, so if people want to get involved or help, Concussion Legacy Foundation is your organization. Is there any place people should go to support, or is there any call to action?
Yes, thank you for asking. Go to concussionfoundation.org or find us on the social medias. This is one of the more neglected areas of research, and so we are always looking for support. We're always looking for brain donors. Thank you both so much for your brain and people who participate in clinical studies. You can also be an advocate in your community to try to keep your kids safe. So we have various programs you can get involved with, but the key is get involved. The sad thing is CT should not exist. Almost all of it is voluntary, and those choices start as children, and we can change this culture. And in the meantime, we have to dramatically accelerate our research so that we have cures for all the people we grew up watching or now all the people who are friends.
Are you in the unique position where when you go to a football game, the players love you and the upper brass can't stand that you're there?
The upper brass definitely can't stand that I'm there. They don't give me access to the players. So it is hard. And then when you are a player, most of them, I'm finding, live in a bubble where they don't even appreciate what we're trying to do.
Right.
Because it's really hard to go do your job when you're thinking about your brain.
Of course.
But they have been motivated as a union. They have pushed internally for these changes.
Right. And so the ones I know through like the executive committee who are actually in those meetings, they do love us. I spent time with one of them yesterday. Those guys are great. The only place this really happens actually when I go back to WWE. The wrestlers really appreciate how much safer wrestling is now.
They made a lot of big changes.
Yeah.
Shockingly. That was part of the doc. I was like,
yeah.
Humans are so complex.
Yeah.
This guy's doing this, but then he's open to that.
Triple H was on our board for 6 years, and he really gets it. And so it's amazing now that he's in charge, the influence that has over the whole safety.
Yeah. Well, Chris, you're radical. What an incredibly weird story that brought you here. I love it. And I'm grateful for the work you're doing. And I hope you're effective in making sure little kids don't get hit in the head over and over again.
Thank you very much, Dex.
Yeah.
It's been an honor. It's a noble cause.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Unfortunately, they made some mistakes.
I had a rare occurrence, and I would do also, oh, this is great. This dovetails nicely into what we did a week ago.
Okay.
Delta's Play. There was two showings of Delta's Play, 1 p.m., 5 p.m.
Yeah.
You went to the 1 p.m.
Yes.
I did not, and I regret it deeply. But while I wasn't at that play,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, I can finally go get my shingles vaccine.
Oh.
When you turn 50, this is a public service announcement.
Okay.
You are now eligible to get the shingles vaccine.
Interesting.
I mean, maybe they'd give it to you before. I don't know. But when I was at my physical this year, and he's like, okay, so now you got to get your shingles vaccine, which sign me up.
Right.
Do you know anyone that's had shingles?
Well, that's a ding, ding, ding that comes up in not this week. If you're on listening to Wondery Plus, the episode.
Well, that is a real, that's crazy. Anyways, I've had a friend who had it. It's miserable.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Nerve pain.
Mm-hmm.
And as our lovely pharmacist, we share a pharmacist, Rosalind.
Yes.
She was saying, like, opiates don't block nerve pain, which I didn't understand that or know that or whatever. But just agonizing pain. I don't want that. Also, I've complained about this in the past. What a gross name for a disease. Shingles.
I know.
It makes me think of shingles on a roof and that your skin starts getting.
Of course. That's what we all see.
Flaps.
When
and
we
then
hear it.
Tearing off and stuff. That's not what happens. Is it just adult chicken pox shingles?
Yeah, but it is. I think it's more it's nerve pain. And then for a percentage of people, it never goes away.
Oh.
I know.
Okay, so I was in there and I never go to the pharmacy, but I get all my pharmaceuticals from R&D. We've talked about it once before. It's the cutest pharmacy in all of Los Angeles.
It is.
At Hillhurst and Franklin. And because I was there for a vaccine, she had to help a couple people before me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was in Mayberry. Everyone that walked in, she knew by name.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Knows everything about them. It was like a town hair cutter or I guess town pharmacist.
Yeah. Yeah, she's so nice. Maybe people will remember if they've listened for a long time. Her and I had a beef originally.
What was that about?
We had a beef when she used to work at Rite Aid.
Yes.
And I had to pick up a prescription for Kristen, and she wouldn't let me get it on her behalf, and there was a whole to do, and we were in a beef.
Sure.
But then we made up, and now she's one of my favorite people. I love her.
You squashed it, as they say in beefs.
Yeah, we squashed the beef.
Okay, now, do you want to tell folks about the play on Saturday?
Sure. So, I went to Delta's play. It was at 1 p.m.
Alice in Wonderland.
It was Alice in Wonderland. She was Tweedledee of Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Her best friend was Tweedledum.
And, yeah. Well, we've discussed sometimes, we've discussed the plays at your kids' school. And it's no shade, but it is shade. That's why, like, there's no way
it's
to talk.
It's not shade. I'll tell you why it's not shade. Every movie you see with plays for kids, this is how plays for fourth graders are. So there's like, there's no shade. They have like three rehearsals.
Well, I did walk out and there was a man talking to his daughter who obviously had gone to that school. And he was like, I don't remember yours being this bad. So I'm just saying they're all like this. But yes, there's always technical difficulties. There's always
memorization issues.
A lot of memorization issues, which that, yes, that I can.
I thought that's what you're referring to.
No.
Okay.
The like the play itself, the sound, the mic's not being on for this and that, the light being here when it should be there. Like, it's a mess.
Yeah.
And it is very funny and fun to go and
it's what
and
you
see.
Want. I guess that's
want.
I guess that's why I'm saying it's actually a success.
It's part of the appeal.
It's what you want, because I then went to five, and they had figured it all out. Like, they really, really what it seems like is they just needed one more rehearsal.
Yeah, sure.
That 1 p.m. rehearsal. Because I had heard that, like, you know, no one has their lines. People are nudging the narrator. I mean, and that's what you live for with fourth graders on stage. Delta's barking orders at people.
Yeah, she's breaking the fourth wall a lot.
There is no fourth wall for Delta.
Yeah.
People started clapping. Explain that. Well,
okay.
First of all, she saw you and then put her tongue out like provocatively and crawled on the ground and was like,
well, no, that's not, no.
That was Lincoln's reenactment.
Yes,
of it.
That's not what happened. She was already in, they were in the dance. She was in a position where she was sort of squatting. She wasn't getting down. She was like down and she was doing her move. And then she just like looked up at us and gave us a little, I don't remember it being like nasty, but Kristen and Lincoln think it was nasty. We thought
it
was like
directly to
flirting.
Her soulmate.
Yeah, me and Anna, I think. She was like to both of us, like a little like, hey, I see you.
Yeah, I gotta wag my tongue at you guys.
And I was really happy she did that, because I will say it was the first time. As soon as she came out,
yeah,
she it was a dance thing or a song.
Yeah.
And Kristen was filming the whole time, you know, she was filming and Lincoln was cheering really, 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 really loudly.
Yeah.
And Delta like looked over at us and just like shook her head.
Too loud.
It was just like an overall like shaking her head. And I was like, uh-oh, she's mad. And we just started. We just started the play and she's not happy.
I love too that those two could find a way to get into a little power struggle, not even in the same
reality. Exactly. And so then every time she came out, she was clearly like, she was pretty annoyed by the way like this play was going. And so then later when she did that like winky thing to me and Anna, I was like, oh, maybe it's lifted. Maybe she's happy now.
Now she's having fun.
Yeah. But yeah, she came out. She had like, they had this big scene and Lincoln was cheering again, like really loud, but also like screaming her name.
Yeah.
Delta said, the song isn't even over yet. And then they did their thing, but then something happened with the mic, and so she was upset about that. I think she said, this sucks, out loud.
After she got off stage.
Yeah.
This was fun. This was more of a detective thing that followed me going, which is some kid, when they walked off stage, said, well, that sucked.
Yeah.
And they still had their mic on.
Right,
and that
exactly.
was the last thing the audience heard. So I heard that from a parent at the 5 o'clock. Like, oh, my God, the funniest part of the whole thing was at the end, one of them just said, well, that sucked. And I go, that sounds like my kid, for sure.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm telling Delta later, I go, yeah, I guess someone said, well, that sucked. And she goes, boy, that, I feel like I might have said that. And I go, good, because I really felt like it would definitely be something you would say.
Yeah, I think it was her. I think it was her. But also, in while she was still on stage, there was a snafu with, like, a mic situation. And then she was like, she got upset about that. And then she did say, like, no, you're supposed to say this. You know, there was a lot of people saying, no, now you say this. Now you say this. You say this. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on.
Oh, there's nothing better.
It was really funny. It was really, really funny.
So I got the report from everyone that that's what had gone down. Mm-hmm. And so I was so excited to go to 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And 5 o'clock went off with almost out of hits. Everyone knew their lines. All the mics were working.
Sure.
I was delighted that she still was fully breaking the fourth wall.
What'd she do in that one?
Well, she saw me.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, cheering and waving. And then she started waving at me. And then she was doing the I love you hand signs to me. And then she was doing the heart thing to me. And just really blasting me from the stage.
Sure.
And I just, it made me so happy. And I was laughing so hard. And it was, God, was it fun. And I'm going to commend them on this too. They kept that fucking thing under an hour. And that's incredible for these kids' plays. That thing that came in at just under or about an hour.
Okay. And
a lot of times these plays have an intermission.
Yes, yes.
And it's a long time.
Yeah.
This was a perfect amount of time.
Also, for this play specifically, I guess not enough people signed up. So they opened it up to like the young kids. So there were some really small kids involved.
There were some super
cute. And
they
were so cute.
I'm telling you, one of the kids was definitely Ralphie from Christmas Story.
The wolf?
Yep.
Yeah, the wolf was so cute.
So cute.
I know.
I couldn't keep my eyes off a couple of those kids.
Yeah.
There was a little girl too with glasses that was, when you see someone, like, she was in it.
Right. That's okay. So this is where I have some trouble. Okay.
Yeah.
And I get it. This is like a school play. No one's really, I guess they are picking, but not really. They're not really picking. They're just like doing it. So the level of commitment is so varied.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
And I think my sense of justice sometimes starts flaring up during the plays.
Uh-huh.
Because I think, look at this kid. This kid is here to perform.
Well, they put a lot of energy.
They care so much.
Yeah, they practiced a ton.
They practice, they're memorized, they're off book. And like then there are other people who haven't done anything, clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're ruining the play for these other people who have put in a lot of work. And, you know,
it would make sense that you have that point of view and I have my point of view.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be an actor in school.
Yeah.
And clearly you're not going to find 35 kids who are trying to become actors. We're in LA.
Yeah.
5 or 6 of the kids on that stage are probably going on auditions.
Right, for sure.
But 98% are just trying to be social after school.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I love, so for me, because I wasn't trying to do that.
Yeah.
I'm so glad they're just having fun.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
What a
You're
memory
right.
of horsing around and fucking the thing up.
Yeah.
And
but when I was in 5th grade, we had a play.
Okay.
And we did have to like kind of audition for it in the way that they're doing the same thing. And it was like this weird mashup of Hamlet, Romeo and Juliet, and Taming of the Shrew. Okay.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want to be an actor.
Okay.
At that point, I didn't know anything about that. But I auditioned and I got the part of the haberdasher.
Okay, great.
That's
someone
a hat
who
maker.
Sells stuff.
Yeah, and it was not a good part, and I had one line.
Okay.
And I was very shy. Like, I was so shy at that time. But I, like, the amount of times I practiced that one line, it had nothing to do with wanting to be an actor. It was just like,
you want to do the right thing.
I just knew, like, this requires commitment.
Yeah.
And I nailed it. Yeah. Here is the hat your worship ordered is the line. I'll never forget
it.
It's
barely even a line. Yeah, it's
okay.
Just a few words.
The hat. Here is the hat your worship ordered.
It's really good. I hope everyone clapped. And then you said, oh, that's not over. So what's immediately great about, for me, Delta's interest in it.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be Alice. She auditioned specifically to be Tweedledee with her friend Tweedle. She just wants to be in the play if she can be with her best friend as Tweedledee Tweedledum.
Yeah.
The kids that want to do it, they want the bigger parts.
Right.
So it's like, I already love it because it's just about her and her friend doing this thing together.
I agree.
Yeah.
Also,
and they were good, by the way.
They were. And so, but that also, for me, a tiny bit, I was like, Delta, don't do that because you're good. This is cute and good. Like, the Tweedledee Tweedledum back and forth is a real, like, kind of tongue twister.
Yeah, and they nailed it.
And they nailed it. And it was really good and impressive. And I was like, oh, man, like, I wish we hadn't had that. I mean, it was funny for me.
Yeah.
And I liked it because, you know, I just enjoy any time she's doing anything. But I was like, it did take away from a very impressive thing that these two little girls were doing together.
Yeah. I thought it was all very true to who she is, which is all I want for her, if that makes sense.
Yeah. She was so cute in her little makeup and her outfit.
Yeah, and their little exchange was tricky.
It was hard.
Yes.
That's what I picked. I was like, this is fast and tricky because they're getting names wrong.
Because Tweedledum is dumb, presumably, and doesn't know their name. So it's like they keep introducing themselves, and Tweedledum keeps introducing herself as Tweedledee, and then they have this back and forth kind of who's on first thing.
Yes.
And it's very confusing.
It is. It's a lot to keep in your brain.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really good. And I wasn't surprised. I was like, no wonder she got that part, because she is able to hold a lot in her. No, I don't know if any of these other, I mean, whatever. Maybe they could. But like seeing what was going on with people not being able to memorize, like, very
here's your
basic
hat, sir.
Yeah, here's the hat your worship ordered.
That's hard because you had worship in there.
No, now I'm nervous.
Oh no, you blew your line.
If you can't get that, you can't do what they did.
Yeah.
And so I was impressed.
I'm gonna admit too, I'm probably just too in love with Delta. Whatever she does, I think I like.
Yeah.
And I reverse engineer why that's perfect for her, because I just see her being herself, and I'm wrapped around her finger. So I guess I'm trying to acknowledge that.
I love her too, so much. And it wasn't like, oh, she shouldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
It was like, oh, she doesn't have to do that.
Right.
She's just good enough.
Right.
Like, she's good enough. They were good. It didn't. And I guess also for me, I was like, don't let your sister get
rattle
in your
you.
Head, rattle you. Exactly.
Yeah,
I was like, now you're rattled and now you're doing this and you're in the middle of like a really cute thing that you're doing that you know how to do well. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Don't let the emotion interfere here.
Right, right. Sure, sure. There's a bigger fun world view here, which right is like if the show is good.
Yeah.
I will not remember it when I'm 65.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like, it's just interesting, like, if you can fast forward, what in life you'll enjoy and care about and remember. And all the parents there.
Yeah.
Like, what I'm saying is I'm bummed I went to the 5 and not one.
No, I know.
And I bet most parents that went to the 1 had the most amount of fun.
Yes, it was so fun. I'm glad I went to that one and I didn't go to the 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And that's just funny that about life.
Let's say your kid's in soccer. I guess Lincoln was in soccer.
Yeah.
But
she was in soccer.
Yeah.
So I've had this experience.
She was in soccer, but everyone was kind of not very good.
Well, they had a perfect record.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lost every game. And even more so, they never scored a goal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a flawless season.
Yeah, flawless season.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we love. But like, let's say you're watching her, and this is probably just my personality and how I grew up, how my parents parented.
Right.
If you're watching and she's like, good, like really good.
Yes.
But something's happening that's not allowing her to like
realize her goals.
Realize her goals and her potential. Do you think it's good, bad, or just personal, I guess, to say it to them? Like,
oh, this is a huge, endless debate you have in your head the whole time.
Yeah.
So two things are really relevant. One is I have the inclinations you have right now about Delta, I don't have when I watch Delta. I have them towards Lincoln.
Interesting.
Because Lincoln and I have similar character defects. And Additionally, I would probably be less forgiving of the chaos watching a Lincoln play because she really takes it serious and wants to do great. And she's put her heart into it.
Right.
And so Delta's not betraying herself and she's not getting further from her goal.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
And on the soccer team, all this stuff's going on. And now what I'm feeling bad for is my friend Scott's daughter is an awesome soccer player and she's on this team with, you know,
people
my
who
kid.
Don't care.
And that, yeah, people playing for the first time.
Right.
And so I do, I'll observe that and I'll go like, oh, she deserves a much better team. Look how hard, I mean, literally she's carrying the entire team.
Yeah.
And then the thing I have with Lincoln while watching is like, I don't want to give her a tip about passing or about kicking or scoring or any of that. But I'm fighting the urge to tell her, I expect nothing from you other than you run at that person and run dead into
you
them.
Commit.
You got to get over your fear of a collision. And you minimally what you have to be is brave. I'm not asking you to be skilled and have all these skills, but I want you to right now acknowledge it won't hurt if you decide to confront. Because that's so much of these young soccerers. It's like someone's coming with the ball and the defender runs up and they're just so afraid of locking legs or just confronting the way you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my age old. I want her to be brave. I don't want her to get taken advantage of. I want her to be fearless in defending herself.
Right.
So when I'm watching, I don't care if she scores. I don't want her to be afraid to confront that runner with the ball. And then I spend the whole game debating whether I'm going to bring that up in the car or not.
Mm.
And for six games, I don't bring it up. And then on the seventh game, I bring it up. And then I don't know if it was the right or wrong decision.
Everyone has different beliefs about the world. And then I guess you're just imparting it on your kids. So like each kid is going to get a different thing.
And I can totally acknowledge both sides of it. There's like a group of people that are taking life really serious and they're trying their ass off. And it's very unfair to them that some other people are just here to have a blast.
Well, it's not unfair. No. I don't think that's the problem. The problem is if you do care, right? Like if she's like, I really want to be good at soccer, and then she isn't practicing, right?
Yeah,
like
I
think that is something to say, right?
Yeah,
like if you want to be good,
can't get good by thinking about something.
Yes. If you're on the field, and there's like an issue, you have an issue. There's like a thing you're not good at.
Yep.
I think it is okay to say, hey, let's work on this because this is where we have like trouble if you want to be good. Yes. If you're there to just run around and who cares?
Yeah.
Your thing is bravery. And I think my thing is like commitment.
Yeah. And both are legit. And I feel bad for the serious people that are annoyed by the people fucking off. And I feel bad for the people having a great time in life who people are mad at. You know, like I see it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, is life a big farce? I think so.
Well, you don't think so when you're in Costco and you're trying to get your scene done and somebody's fucking around and it's interfering with you.
Great point. Yeah.
Because you care about that, right? Like that's the, and it's.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It's just.
I mean, it's that we've all flown to New Mexico.
What's that mean?
To execute this thing. It's not like you can't wander onto a film set.
Right.
You know, but you're right.
Yeah, it's the same theory. It's the same idea that this person's like, I'm here to have fun in this life.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm here to do a job.
Yeah. And the first time I was like, I get it. I might have done the same thing if I had a smaller role in the movie and I wanted to pop.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I said, hey, if you keep doing this, we're never going to get the scene because my character can't be interrupted in this race. And then you choose to do it. Then I'm the person who wants to get the job done and someone else is fucking around. So yeah, I'm.
We're all on both sides of it at different times.
And now, God bless him for giving me that experience. Because I've done a million scenes in a million movies and I remember very few of them. And that is so memorable. And it's one of my best stories. And it's like, ultimately in the game of life, I'm delighted he fucked that up so many times and all the shit happened.
Right.
So I guess it's like, what point in time are you evaluating these things is also really relevant.
Sure.
Is it in the moment? Is it 5 years later? Is it on your deathbed? Is it as, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Tricky
And the
stuff.
World can't be, the whole world can't be thinking this whole thing's a joke. Because things got to get done.
Exactly, yeah.
Science has to be done.
Uh-huh.
And I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Armchair Expert, if you dare.
Oh my gosh, I guess it's a ding, 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 because this is for Chris Nowinski, and we were talking about soccer.
I have a quick David Chang update, if you want to.
Oh, yeah, David Chang update.
Oh, gosh, I hope it's about the bread.
Oh, here we go.
Wildflower Bakery in Freestone. We were coming back from visiting some friends, and they said the bread there was great, and it was.
And it was. Wildflower Bakery.
Wow, shout out.
Yeah. You did a whole graphic here, Rob?
I did. I had a little more time for this one.
Nice.
Now, Rob, how do you deal? Because, Rob, you do everything right. It's something I am so grateful to you for. You are such a meticulous planner and just a great manager of all things that need doing. Did it drive you nuts growing up when people just were fucking off and didn't give a shit?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. On behalf of us, I'm sorry.
I mean, I was also the one doing it, so depending on what it was for, too.
Right.
Chris,
show me those creamy hamstrings. I used to be able to do that voice, but now I've lost my upper registered. It's a Family Guy character. He always wants Chris to come in his basement and show him his creamy hamstrings or creamy thighs. Oh, I mean, he's clearly a pedophile, but they find a way to make it quite cute and funny in the cartoon. God. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so I said that no one on the football team was in my AP classes, and that's not true.
Uh-oh.
There was at least one, Doug Sellers, shout out. I remembered him after the fact, and there might have been more. I don't know. When was Tough Enough the TV show on, and how many seasons of Real World had there been? There are 6 seasons starting in 2001, and the first episode of Real World was in 92.
Okay, 9 years.
Yeah, so it was in its 10th season when Tough Enough started.
And as I told you in 96, I partied with Pedro.
Yes, you did.
Who was season 1, San Francisco one. Real World.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Since past.
Sweet, sweet guy. What a fun night we had.
Okay, how many people currently play high school football in the United States? In the 23-24 school year, over 1 million high school students in the U.S. participated in 11-player football. This number includes 99% boys. For boys, it is the most popular high school sport with over 1 million players.
Now, do you think that remaining 1% that's girls, do they have a girl league, or there's girls playing on the boys' football team?
It's a great question.
You want to know something I'm embarrassed to admit?
What?
So I'm deep in my Friday Night Lights rewatch. I cannot recommend it enough for people with kids. It's such a fun family show. We've never had more fun watching a show together. It's a drug. We love it. We fight every night about when to turn it off.
Uh-huh.
It never occurred to me that they can practice. That, of course, they can just play games in practice. Because the team is split into 2 teams. The defense, I don't know why that never crossed my mind. Like, we're watching Friday Night Lights, and they practice a ton on the show.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, duh, yeah, they can play a real game endlessly.
Right.
Because they have everyone they need.
True.
You can't do that in basketball. I mean, you'd be splitting up. I don't know why that never crossed my mind.
It is hard, though, because you aren't playing, like, the best. Like, you're not playing against...
Unless your team has the best defense.
Right.
Your offense almost has an advantage because they're being forced to play against best defense. It's probably like a virtuous cycle.
Yeah, probably.
Hockey gets that a little bit because you've got 4 offensive lines and 3 defensive lines.
Yes, but then you're going to have, like, the goalie's going to be half as good. Talk about a fucking position I would not want to have.
No way.
There's all these things where consistency is important.
Yeah.
Those are not good things for me.
Yeah.
Or everything, your whole job boils down to 1 second. Like, I need a lot of time, and I need to be intermittently good, and I'm going to be bad intermittently. That's kind of how I can operate.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. You think you can't, like, make the shot when it counts?
But even when you make the shot, you've been dribbling for a while, and you made a couple moves, and you're in your rhythm. This is just, you're standing dead still, and you're up!
Right.
And here it comes.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, you got to be perfect.
That's true.
With no lead up.
That's true.
I need lead up. That's why I like driving. It's like, Anyone will tell you, like, it's very rare that unless you're in F1.
Yeah.
There's 21 turns on a track. You're not acing all 21 turns on the track. You've blown one, you're recovering on a couple, and that's standard.
Right.
So now it's just like a percentage of how good you were. So that works for me. You have a lot of time to make mistakes and recover and be perfect and then not good. But these jobs that require you to be excellent every time scare the bejesus out of me. A symphony orchestra player. Mm.
So impressive.
I need to be a jazz, like, improv. Yeah. It's like, some of it's like, I don't know, is that okay? And then, whoa, that was a nice lick.
Yeah. Did you hear Skype is done?
What?
Skype.
It went away? It lost out to Zoom?
It did.
Was Skype owned by something
Microsoft.
Else? Microsoft. Yeah. It's hard to feel bad for Microsoft.
I know, but it's just like, I feel so bad for Skype. They really shit the bed.
It's weird that it didn't take off. It was already there.
It was there. It could have been.
That might speak to, like, if you didn't catch the learning curve initially, you think it's insurmountable and you'd rather just learn the new thing that came your way and everyone's figuring it out. Well, this will comfort you. I just weirdly stumbled. I don't know why. I read an article about quarterly profits.
Uh-huh.
And Microsoft's quarterly profit was $70 billion. Their quarterly.
That's pretty good.
That's not. Yeah, like, that's awesome. $280 billion is what they'll profit this year.
Yeah. I just feel like the story of Skype is a sad one. They were in leading position to take the pandemic, and they didn't. They let this, like, this little, like, rando.
Isn't that the story of the internet? It's like you had Yahoo, you had AOL, all these things that seem like, institution.
Yeah.
And somebody, AOL bought Warner Brothers and Time Warner and just vanished.
Yeah. I mean, there was so, at the beginning of the pandemic, we were saying, like, we'll Skype you now, we'll Skype you in, but we were using Zoom.
Right.
Like, the verb was Skype.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even being used.
It didn't work out.
I guess it's an underdog story too, which we like.
Yeah. I have friends who invented a very popular one, and I even had to talk to them. And I was like, I don't want to use yours. I want to use Zoom.
Ouch. Okay. The percentage of high school footballers who make it to the NFL.
Of the million we just learned that play football.
Right. Okay. A tiny fraction of high school football players, roughly 0.023%, make it to the NFL. This means that for every 1,000 high school football players, about 23 will eventually play in the NFL, which I thought was kind of like a lot.
That's what the article says?
Yep.
God, that seems really, really high. Because how many people get into the NFL every year?
Let's see.
How many are drafted?
257.
257.
So that would mean there was only 100,000 players.
Of age.
Well, yeah, exactly. Senior year.
Right. I guess there's the million playing football might include junior high football players and youth football. And
maybe it includes rec league.
Definitely 9 through 12.
It definitely includes 9 through 12.
Okay.
And then 9, 10, 11 obviously aren't drafted.
Yeah. It says there's approximately 77,000 college football players. So fourth of those are probably of age to then go get drafted.
And then, did you say 300 get drafted?
257.
Wow. God, I mean, that just seems really impossible. Which doesn't it? That a few hundred will go every year?
Oh, I know.
Out of 77,000 that are already playing in college? So hard to, it's almost impossible to play college football.
Yeah, I know. Really hard to do.
Again, Friant Light smashes. He thinks he's going to the NFL. Everyone thinks they're going to the NFL.
Yeah. Well, you gotta dream big.
I mean, you gotta go for it.
Yeah. I think that might be it for Chris. I loved this episode, obviously.
I'm trying to think what the equivalent episode would be for me.
It's a very important topic, and I'm glad we covered it.
Yeah, me too. Can you think of an obsession of mine that might be fun? It would be car related, I guess.
Well, no, this isn't shopping.
Mine's Total Wolf.
Well, that would be Anna Wintour. This is what's your cause? Like, what do you care is being talked about that's not being talked about?
Yeah, we've had a couple people that their main concern was that we're not listening to each other. Right. That was really rewarding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, Chris, and he was very cool and nice.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. All right.
All right. Love you.
Follow Armchair Expert on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to every episode of Armchair Expert early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.